Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is
a little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my
friend? A Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah. This is Tech Talk. Good morning. This is Tech Talk. You're listening to WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights. Michael, Tech Talk Hassler here, right at you. Flying a bit solo today. We got Dave is up with Yoko in beautiful, beautiful Canada. So we're going to be talking a little bit about some Windows 8. I got some emails, Facebook hits from some longtime listeners. James out there wanted to know a little bit about Windows 8. I've got a little bit to share with you, so we'll talk about that. We got the inimitable Jay Geek Trivia Garmin is going to be on here just in a little bit. And then at the end of the show, as always, of course, we always try to get in some of those cool sites of the week. I got a few that are really, really hot for you right now. I want you to stay in and listen to those. And then the podcast only song of the week is going to be one that you're going to want to stick around for and listen to as well. So again, should be a good show. Even flying solo should be a lot of fun. And again, you're listening to Tech Talk. Windows 8, man, that's been the big news, right? Everybody's talking about this because, of course, the release, developers release, and all that has finally been released, I guess is the way to say it. It's finally come out. You can get the consumer preview now. If you don't know where to go for that, just do a quick Google on it. Microsoft, it's all over the Microsoft sites and all that too, and also too over all the blogs. My favorite place to go for a lot of this kind of information is Lifehacker, does a great job, and also too Gizmodo. Gizmodo.com has got a lot of really interesting takes on Windows 8. Now, Windows 8 is kind of a different thing for Microsoft in a way. They're still trying to promote and push the idea of you having a Windows and Microsoft-based operating system for your devices. The difference is what's happening now is they've seen, they've recognized, and they're appreciating the fact that people are using multiple devices to do some of the same things that they've traditionally done with a single device. They're bringing things together and trying to make it easier for you to move from device to device. Now, Windows Phone has had a unique sort of interface for quite some time, and if you've seen it, then you kind of know what it looks like. It's got this Metro user interface, this way of setting things up that's very blocky and is sort of it's unique. You gotta see it, you gotta look for it and see it to understand what I mean. There's blocks, and they're these kind of odd shaped blocks. There's not a consistency or flow to the size of the boxes, and you flip between screens like you're used to on the Windows Phone, and that's where your applications are stored, and your widgets and your things that you're used to in kind of an Android environment or an iOS environment, they're stuck in these blocks. So it's a little different. It's a little interesting. And that now has been applied to the way that the desktop operating system is going to work as well. And so it's really trying to converge the look and feel between your mobile and your desktop device usage. And I think that that is an admirable thing to do. I think it's a good thing to do, and I think it's something that's been a long time coming. I'll be surprised if we don't see similar attempts as this from, say, Mac, Apple stuff. They're not that far off right now, but it is a different feel. It is a different look and feel when you get onto the iPhones and the iPads than it it is from when you're, you know, you're running Tiger or whatever it is that your OS on your desktop. The other thing that that is changing too is going to be some of the back end management of your tools. One of the things that is a big selling point for the Windows 8 release is that for the tablet usage, if you get a Microsoft Windows 8 tablet, you will be able to run multiple applications at the same time. That's something that true multitasking, not only at the same time, but in the same window. So not widgets, which you see in Android right now, but true multitasking where you can have different processes running on your same tablet in the same window, and looking at them in that way. It looks a little bit like a, if you remember X Windows, from way back, similar look and feel to that or similar to what you would see on your desktop today. So I think there's going to be some big changes. I think there's going to be some good things coming out. Now I have to confess, I haven't played with it myself yet. Why is that? Well, certainly you can download it, and if you've got a spare machine, you can throw it onto a new machine and play with it. And really, you don't need a lot of power. The specs that they recommend are a gigahertz or faster processor, making sure you've got a gig to 2 gig of RAM. If you're 64-bit, you got to have at least 2 gig of RAM. And then 16 to 20 gig of available hard drive space. Again, that 20 gig minimum is for the 64-bit. You know, DirectX 9 graphics devices, blah, 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 blah. So really it's similar to what you would need if you're running Windows 7 anyways. So you probably have a machine that can run it. The question is, of course, with these consumer previews, how long is it going to last? How long are they going to let you use it before you got to pony up cash and grab it? And so that's keeping, some people from installing it full blown on a machine if you don't have a spare one that you don't care about. But what you can do, and what a lot of people are recommending, what I personally am going to do myself, hopefully within this next week or so, is that I'm going to test drive the Windows 8 consumer preview, but I'm going to do it in a virtual machine. I've got a couple of Windows 7 boxes that I use at home, laptops and desktop, and Windows 7 and even some of the later versions of Windows XP are going to let you run virtual box machines. I'm sorry, not XP, I meant Vista. Will let you do virtual machines, and you can create these very easily and quickly. And as long as you've got another OS to install on them, you can do whatever you want with it. Well, now that you've got the consumer preview of Windows 8, you can throw that in a virtual machine and use it in a, kind of a sandbox sort of methodology. You don't even have to dual boot your computer. You can run it straight out of Windows 7. Now, what I'm hearing from people is that they're getting really good results with doing that, that the speed and functionality of it is pretty decent. So that might be something worth doing. One of the increases or one of the improvements that's supposed to happen with Windows 8 is your performance. Performance is supposed to be quite a bit better than it was with Windows 7, which is impressive because Windows 7 performance was quite a bit better than it was with Windows Vista. So we'll see how that comes out. One of the downsides, of course, to this is going to be, if you're using it for your mobile device, the Windows Store, the App Store, just isn't quite there yet. You know, it's going to take some time. It's just like with Android, it takes time to start building that critical mass of developers to create the apps that you really want to use. And so we'll see how that happens. And then the plus side, though, I think the biggest plus side is if you're already in the Microsoft ecosphere, if you've got Office 365, if you've got a live account, if you're doing sync and you've got all these things with Microsoft, your SkyDrive, you're a SkyDrive user, as I am. I use SkyDrive myself, and you share Office docs that way. Again, seamless, beautiful integration with all that. It's similar to the Google Answer. It's similar to the Apple iCloud that they're finally coming through with here. But I think my guess is Microsoft's going to do it very, very well, and we'll see how that comes together. The only frustrations that I've had with the SkyDrive and the Windows Live and all that, and admittedly, I know I should have been smart about it. They say that they're in beta on this stuff, but I keep expecting it to be permanent enough and stable enough that I can just keep using it. And they keep changing the blasted stuff on me. I think Windows Live and Live Drive and all this has probably had four or five different names, and I'm not a Hotmail user, so you know, for a while it was tied into Hotmail, and then they changed it from that. So we'll see. We'll see what winds up shaking out with that. I hope that answered some questions. As I said, I was getting some bings this morning from longtime listeners, and just wanted to, and actually even an email earlier this week. So I apologize. I haven't had time to play with the ones. I do actually get in there, get my hands dirty, and get elbow deep in Windows 8. I'll definitely be talking about it again and tell you about that experience. Well, you know, there hasn't been a tremendous amount of news this week. I think people are kind of holding their breath a little bit as they wait for the iPad 3 to be released. You know, you hear a lot of rumors. Everybody's talking, what's going to be different? Everyone's excited. Oh my gosh, the iPad 3. Should I sell my iPad 2 now? Should I wait until... it's going to be interesting. I have to confess. Everyone is, of course, working very, very hard to come up with these differentiators as the tablet market is starting to commoditize itself. And by that, I mean that you're getting the same thing whether you buy an iPad or you buy a Samsung Galaxy Tab. Admittedly, I know the flavors are different. I'm not going to get into the big Android, Mac, flame war discussion here and all that. But my feeling of it is that when it comes right down to it, you're buying pretty much the same thing now. You've got a device that connects to the internet. You've got a device that allows you to view documents, that can run specific applications and games and tools and productivity applications to use. One does it a little bit better. One has a little bit faster. But when it comes down to it, you're getting the same thing now. So how are they going to differentiate? Well, Kindle and Amazon, of course, took the stance of, hey, I'm going to differentiate on price. I'm not going to give you a full-blown 10-inch screen. It's not going to be high def. You're not going to have some of the access to things that you would otherwise, but gosh darn it, it's going to be the cheapest thing out there, and it's going to be pretty darn good for your money, good enough that millions of people have bought it now and have entered into the tablet fray. Enough so, in fact, that recently I was reading some statistics that say that most of people's reading time now that has actually exceeded paper reading. That includes newspaper reading, that includes magazine reading, and so on. So this is definitely happening, and one of the ways remaining that you can really differentiate, I don't think, is going to be on speed. I think it's going to be on screen, screen real estate, screen size, and screen clarity. People are watching, they're reading more, as I said, but I think that's going to lead as well to we're starting to watch more on our mobile devices as well. And because of that, people want clearer screens, they want bigger screens, and they want screens that can really take the place of a television and take the place of what we've come used to with our HD TVs now. So one of the rumors that I've heard that I think probably makes a lot of sense is the iPad HD is going to come out, and this is going to double the screen resolution of the iPad 2. The iPad 2, if you remember, had a 1024 by 768 pixel screen that comes out to about 130 pixels per inch. This is expected to maybe be the same size, but double resolution, 2048 by 1536, coming out to 264 pixels per inch. And so that means that if you think about that, because of the way this works out, is that a quarter of the screen will have the same number of pixels as the entire screen of the iPad 2. This is going to give you, beyond that ocular resolution or retina resolution or whatever it was that Steve called it before he took off on us here. And really make these screens the equivalent to, as Elgin, Mike Elgin put it, he said it's going to be similar in look to a glossy magazine sheet, and that you're really not going to be able to exceed the pixelation, you're not going to be able to exceed the resolution that that's going to be available with this. Now, of course, it's possible that the iPad HD might have a front-facing camera for HD FaceTime. It's possible that there's going to be some other things going on with it, but I think that is going to be the main differentiator for the iPad 3. Now, I mentioned earlier about, you know, do you sell it? Do you not sell it? Do you keep that iPad 2? I don't know. I don't know the right answer to that. So I've reached out to our good friends at that we've had on a few times, and of course I'm going to say the name wrong, so I should probably look the name up before I even talk about it. I believe it's Next Worth, and Next Worth is going to come on the show here April 7th, and they're going to talk about specifically that. What do you do with some of these old devices? Do you trade it in now? Do you wait 6 months? When are you going to get the best value for your money on that iPad 2? Now, of course, they're coming to talk to us after the iPad 3 has already come out, but that's okay. They're still going to have a lot to say, I know, about when and how you should sell that, and so that's going to be interesting. You might want to make sure to put a note in your calendar or get hooked up with the Tech Talk calendar, which you can find at techtalk.wrlr.fm, and you can connect it right in with your Google calendar and then know always who it is that we're bringing on air. And April 7th is going to be Next Worth. And speaking of bringing people on air, don't think that I've forgotten our good friend Jay Garman. I think I'm going to try and give him a call actually right now and see if we can bring him along. Oh, there we go. I was going to have me worried. Whenever Skype doesn't make any noise, I get a little worried. Hey, good morning, Mr. Garman. How goes it?
How are
you
doing, guys?
Pretty good. It's just me today. But we're doing okay. Talking a lot about Windows 8 and then also to the upcoming release of the iPad 3 and seeing how excited people are. Are you an iPad guy? Are you excited about the iPad 3?
I am not, because I'm not a tablet guy. I write for a living. I create content for a living. I need a freaking keyboard. This touchscreen stuff is of no use to me.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. I've been seeing a lot more people with using the tablets, but with the with keyboards. They've got either the keyboards that are built into the screen protectors, which those look pretty cool, although I've tried them and I don't like the feel, or the actual full-on Bluetooth keyboard, which they lug around with them, at which point I'm thinking, why don't you just have a laptop?
Yeah, exactly. I get that some people like it when they're like watching video or whatnot, or playing, you know, some kind of games or whatnot, that the touchscreen is useful. I'm not a big, you know, portable game guy at all. You know, I believe in specific input devices for a specific occasion. So if I'm going to game, I want a real controller. But, I am by no means the median consumer on any level, and I will totally concede that. But I will go back to one of the few smart things I thought Steve Ballmer ever said, is when the iPad first came out, they said, "Are you guys worried about the iPad?" And, of course, Steve, being an idiot, said no. But what he said was, "What amuses me, as I go into all these business meetings and I see all these people pulling out their iPads and then spending 3 minutes getting out all the other equipment they need to turn their iPad into a laptop."
That's exactly it. Yeah. Yeah. I see the value. Now, my wife has got a tablet and she loves it. But I think part of that is because she doesn't have a smartphone and she doesn't want a smartphone. Most of the things that I would use a tablet for are perfectly well suited for the small real estate of my smartphone. Doing a quick check on email, not necessarily writing full blown responses back, but quick checks on emails, looking at Google Reader and seeing what the newest stuff is coming down the RSS feed, the occasional casual game You know, I just haven't run into that wall yet where I'm saying, oh, I wish I had an extra 4 inches diagonal of screen space. Then this would be so much easier, you know. Reading, that's about the only thing I run across that I think, gosh, you know, I wish I had my, I wish I had a tablet, you know, for some of the magazine stuff, or I wish I had my Kindle in my pocket with me, you know, and that would be the nice thing for the tablet.
Yeah, but I think the iPad is actually too big. It's a great content consumption device. That's what it is, and I am a content creator more than I'm a content consumer. So again, I'm not the median audience for any of this, but I still like the Kindle Fire form factor for reading, mm-hmm. Just in terms of size, because I think the iPad's too big for a one-handed read. That said, I like Lou Anders, who's the editor-in-chief of Peer Books, who says, the idea of reading on a tablet is so much superior, and the bibliophiles are going to roast me for this. They're reading on paper because you can make notes, you can index, and so on and so forth. If I read Ready Player One by Ernest Cline, which I recommend to people, it's a fun book, but it's steeped in 1980s nerd culture trivia. And I got about 90% of it because I'm a raging geek of about the right age. But the 10% I didn't get, I looked up on Wikipedia separate from the book. It would have been great to have had an annotated Ready Player One version on a tablet where it's like, oh, I don't know that giant robot he's talking about. Oh, okay, that's where that's from. Awesome, that's really cool. I then go right back to reading, as opposed to, you know, like I literally kept a little notebook next to me jotting down things to look up later.
Yep.
As I read that book.
Yep.
Again,
yeah.
I'm very different than most people.
yeah, and that is one thing I love about my Kindle is that there is it's even you know, even like just word definitions. There's a lot of words, and I'm pretty literate. I would consider myself. And there's a lot of words though that I run across that I kind of know the meaning to, and I've seen them enough and in context enough that I certainly know them, but you know, actually being able to just click and get the full on definition, particularly when you read some of the steampunk stuff, and they just love to throw in archaic, obsolete words that it's like, what is this? You know, where does this come from? And you can find out right away, or as you said, make notes and remind yourself later to look up a little more definition on it.
Yeah, that to me is the future of books. Like, you know, I wrote recently that Ready Player One doesn't get published if Wikipedia doesn't exist. Not because Ernest Cline needed Wikipedia to write it, mm-hmm. but because the editor needed to know that Wikipedia was there for the reader. Because if you're not a mid to late 30s video game and movie geek, you won't get half the book.
Yep. Yep.
But because those resources are there, you can read the book, enjoy it, and then go back and check the references like, that's really cool now that you've said that. So I'm like, that's what his password meant. That's great.
and that's exactly, I think there's so much of what we have read in the past that really kind of went by us, you know, not necessarily over our head, but it was just stuff that we didn't have the connection to really get the full sense of it. And the tablet reading, the Kindle reading, things like that, getting us connected, give us an ability to really fully experience that writing in a way that we've never been able to before.
Absolutely. And if we're going to keep going on this tangent, the other problem I have with the iPad is, A, it's too big, and it's too small, because my other great consumption habit is comic books, and they're finally getting digital comic books right, but the 10-inch screen is terrible for reading ported comics because it's just smaller, it's just slightly smaller than a typical comic book page, and they have to either reformat all the speech bubbles and make them bigger so you can read them and so it covers up more of the art, or they just don't and you got to do some zooming to read them. It completely blows the experience. If they had a true, like, I won't say bifold, but like a true at least 8.5 by 11 screen with an additional bezel around it, a real two-handed tablet you put on your lap or it has a little stand behind it and you navigate with that to really consume like pictures with text in a comic book setting, especially with some of the cool stuff Mark Waid's doing with some of his digital native comics, That, to me, would be a much different thing.
Yep.
It's also sort of infuriating to me that it's a 4:3 ratio and not a 16:9, because if I want to watch true HD video on that smallest screen, I don't like the bars.
Yep.
I don't like the widescreen bars. Give me a big enough screen that there's some widescreen resolution for it.
Yeah, yeah, that's, and I'm not much of a comics reader myself, I have to confess, at least not anymore. And so that's where I hit into an issue with it, is that, that not having the 16:9 screen ratio, and I just don't understand why that wasn't built into it. You know, knowing that it was going to be a consumption device, I can kind of see, you know, not, you know, overlooking the graphic arts medium and saying, you know, for whatever reason, that just wasn't considered as essential enough to adapt for it. But the video stuff, I mean, that should have been one of the top things on the list of making it compatible.
Yeah, I know that when you look at a 16:9 screen, it looks like a legal pad when you turn it the wrong way. It feels a little odd in your hands.
Yep.
But to me, it's just, they picked such an odd size for it. It's too big for one hand, but it's not big enough to do a lot of interesting things. So,
yep.
I mean, it's sold well, so what do I know?
Yep.
Clearly, it did something right.
Yes, yeah. Well, yeah.
But again, I'm also on record for saying that the iPad is also the icon of the great usability puzzle we have not yet solved, which is, I want a device that fits in my pocket, but that has a 24-inch screen.
Yeah.
And Google, I don't know if you read this, but Google has, they've sort of leaked that they are working on, quote, Google glasses or Google goggles, which are standard size glasses that project a see-through image onto the lenses that they can then get depth of field on. They have it's basically phase one of alternate reality glasses,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
or augmented reality glasses, which to me solves this whole problem of the screen and the device are now separate, or it can just project into my field of view anything I need to see. It could be my email or this, that, and the other. So it's just the computing component that's in here. And then we could talk about a peripheral input device. But if I could do gesture motion, and it can recognize that, like the Kinect does,
yep,
we're a good 5 or 6 years away from, like, my prediction is that within 10 years, the tablet is going to have been the 8-track tape of portable devices.
Yeah,
where it's like it was important, it was really popular, it got people used to the idea of being able to have content like this portable in a way. But the form factor in the long term is just not practical.
Yep. Yeah. No, I agree with you. Yeah. No, I was really impressed with that article, and actually, in fact, Google was coming out with. I was turned on to an article about it by a good friend of mine who's in California. He's a doctor, and his immediate thought was about, oh my gosh, how great would this be during surgery? And we started this conversation about the different ways that level of stuff could be used. And even now, you know, if you've got Yelp on your smartphone and crank up Monocle, and you'll start to get an idea of sort of the things that would be so much easier if you could have that overlaid on your vision while you're looking around the city trying to find some place to eat.
Exactly. Just anything. It goes back to the F-16 heads-up display. If you don't have to divide your attention, if you can get critically curated data in your standard field of vision, you are much more effective at everything you do. So, and it sort of just becomes part of your environment. So if the doctor can, you know, while he's doing surgery on me, doesn't have to look away to see my blood pressure, doesn't have to look away to see my heart rate.
Yep.
You know, that's helpful. You know, he can tell what's happening without dividing his attention, without tasking and retasking.
Yep.
Total game changer.
Not only that, but knowing instantly that, oh, I just did something because, look, I moved my scalpel and now the blood pressure dropped dramatically. Not having to wait to hear an audio tone, not having to wait to have a nurse tap you on the shoulder. you're seeing it in real time, and even directing you, you know, with showing where, with color identifiers, what area you're supposed to be working on, or what area you should be absorbed with, or what's underneath the fascia that you can't see right now, and so that you don't cut those veins that you shouldn't be cutting. It's mind blowing. I think it's going to be a complete paradigm shift and sea change in how we interact with technology and the world around us. It's going to be cool. Now, that being said, I do have an anecdote to tell. This happened literally just last night. My 9-year-old son, he's got a Kindle. I got him a Kindle. He's got the Hunger Games on Kindle. At his birthday, a friend gave him a paper copy of the Hunger Games. So last night, I see him in bed, and he's reading his paper copy of the Hunger Games. So I ask him, because I was very curious, and I was like, why are you reading it, on paper when you've got it on the Kindle? I know you've been reading it on the Kindle. Why are you reading it this way? And I wish so much that I had pulled out my camera and started recording him or something. He gave me a whole litany of reasons why he likes reading paperback books better than he does on his Kindle. And it's all the stuff we've talked about in the past. It's the, I like the feel of it. He says, it feels more like I'm reading a real book. I understand where I am in the book. I don't have to try and figure it out from the numbers. He says, I know if you tell me I only have a couple minutes left to read before bedtime, I can flip quickly through and see how long it is to the end of the chapter. It was all this list of stuff from a 9-year-old. And it's like, exactly. That's exactly it.
Well, and so to tie it all back together, I think augmented reality glasses are going to be a renaissance for paper books, because you can get all of those peripheral annotations about the content overlaid a traditional book.
So imagine if you
have sort of a gesture where you can, like, indicate a word on the page, and it will do the pop-up and do a Wikipedia search on it on a paper book.
Yes.
If you can get all the back matter on a paper book,
yes,
all that extra stuff, but you still get all the great tactile and sensory and physical joy of a book. More importantly, imagine if you're doing collector's editions that have, you know, micro dot encoding on the pages that AR can read that doesn't interrupt the layout, you know, some sort of, you know, UV little dots behind words or whatnot, and you could toggle on your glasses and say, you know, I want all the bonus content to be auto displayed as I'm going through. And so, you know, you're reading a traditional book, but, you know, it's a black and white paper copy, but you see the illustrations, it paints false color on them, or it animates the illustrations.
Yep.
All of that, but it's still a paper book.
Yep.
It still has value in and of itself. I mean, AR is going to change so much.
Yep. Yeah, that I that hadn't even really occurred to me. And the gestures, really, we're already used to the gestures that we need to use for that kind of things. You know, pressing a word and holding it. There's no reason why that has to be integrated with a piece of hardware. You know, you're absolutely right. Once you have AR, pressing a word that's just there, that's a physical, you know, printed word, should be able to do the same thing for you and build from there. I'm excited to be where we are. I'm excited to be alive. I like that XKCD cartoon. I want to kind of put myself into a cryogenic tube and just come back in about 15, 20 years and see what's really cool. But the problem with doing that is that
you run the Cartman possibility of waking up in a strange version of Buck Rogers run by sentient ferrets. Just because you couldn't wait for the Nintendo
Wii. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And then trying to figure your way back can be tough. Man, well, gee, so I had actually an answer from, of course, Customer Jones about our leap year question. I am very, very curious, because I was actually telling my son, in fact, same kid that I was talking about with the books, we were talking about having this extra day in the month, and of course the geek trivia question is, what day was actually put into February that as a result gives us that 29th day, but it's not the 29th that we're adding. It's some other day in February that we've combined in there, and it's been this way, you said, for millennia. So I can't wait. I am very curious to hear what this might be.
Well, this goes back to ancient Rome, the Julian calendar, as in Julius Caesar, and it actually ties into, timely enough, the Ides of March and so on and so forth. The way that the Romans ran their calendar is they didn't have numbered days because that would be too easy. They had three named days, the calends, which is where the word calendar comes from, which is the first day of the month, the nones, which is out of the fifth or the seventh, because it's a lunar calendar, so it's the first half moon of the month, which would be the fifth or the seventh, depending on how many days are in the month. And then the Ides, which is the 13th or the 15th, depending on the length of the month, which is the full moon. And the way they counted days was, it's strange inclusive counting, it was like they do numbers, like one after five is six. So they would do counting from the sixth day before the calends of March would be February 23rd, because it's an inclusive counting, meaning it's actually 5 days before, but when they say 6 days, they're counting the 1st of March. They're counting the calends, so it's very complicated. They had this big, if you've seen the TV series Rome, which I recommend, you can see them in the beginning moving the marker scroll into all the slots on the physical calendar, counting against these dates. Well, when they created leap year in the Julian calendar, they created what they called the bis sextum. They doubled the sixth day before the calends of March, meaning they doubled February 23rd or created an early February 24th. So they had February 23rd twice. The true late day, when you convert it to our modern calendar, is February 24th. So that if you get up to someone who's really old school about their calendars and their chronology, they will tell you that February 29th is not leap day. February 24th is leap day.
Uh-huh. Inch. So we're celebrating on the wrong day. Gosh darn it. and if you watch 30 Rock, then you know how to celebrate now. Leap year, but now we're celebrating on the wrong day. Calendar stuff just fascinates me. And I remember, it's fun. My kids, both my boys are, and my daughter are taking Spanish. And, there's a lot of the Latin roots in Spanish, and so we were getting to the months, and I was showing them and explaining to them how the months, a lot of them are based on when we used to only have 10 months in a calendar, and you get to September, and then October, which is, of course, octo, which is eight, November, which is nove for nine, and December, deca, for 10. And it's like, why are we calling the 12th month of the year after something that should be the number 10? And of course, it goes back to how messed up our attempts to make sense of the rotation of the Earth around the sun have been for so, so very long. And we still haven't quite gotten it right.
Well, not just that, but those months had more days in them, in a very general sense. And a couple of really egotistical Roman emperors invented months dedicated to themselves, mm-hmm. July for Julius and August for Augustus. Mm-hmm. They're like, no. There need to be months for us. All about us.
Yep. Yeah, well, and Janus for January, and with the gods, and and then of course they had to have a certain number of days, because you wouldn't want your month to have less days than the previous emperor, because that would just be poor form, and
which is why we have that interesting July and August are the two months with 31 days that are back to back, because they're both egotists.
Exactly. Oh, it's just lovely. Just lovely. I can't wait till aliens come and we get to explain this to them and to see them just go, ah, these are our new friends. Uh-huh. I don't know if this is going to work out. I'm sorry. We're leaving.
No, this actually goes back to a column I wrote years ago about things that geeks love to hate about science fiction, and it's aliens that can learn English and all the nuances of it by watching cable TV for a day. Like, we can't do that, and we live here every day. But if you can figure out how to do everything plus slang in a day from watching television, you are so hyper-intelligent, we should just surrender right now. There is no chance we're going to beat you.
Exactly. Without some form of telepathy coming into the mix there, that's a bit more than can be handled, I think. So what should we be thinking about for next week?
Well, yesterday was the 40th anniversary of the launch of Pioneer 10. It was launched on March 2nd, 1972. And we could do 10 straight shows on all the cool things about Pioneer 10. I mean, it's one of those epic experiments of all time. But one of my favorite subjects is the Pioneer plaque, which you've talked about some previously, mm-hmm. That Carl Sagan and Frank Drake designed, a couple of guys with some reputation, with symbols of human beings and our location in the universe and hydrogen and our solar system. But what's interesting about the Pioneer plaque, for all the information they packed into it, and they packed a lot, there is a glaring mathematical inaccuracy built into it that we didn't know in 1972 that we know very well now, that could actually make it really hard for reasons beyond just understanding human symbology for aliens to understand the data on the plaque. So the question is, what is the mathematical inaccuracy on the Pioneer plaque that we now realize is there 40 years later?
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Now, when you were first starting to talk, I thought, they did it intentionally so that, people couldn't find their way back to us, or something like that. But this is something that they thought they knew, but it turns out they did not.
Correct.
Huh. Interesting. Well, I just love the whole story of the plaque and everything that they put together. So that'll be fun to talk about for next week. Well, Jay, I'm gonna let you go. I gotta run some spots and all sorts of good stuff and talk to people about how they can support WRLR. But as always, it is just a blast to have you on. And people can always find more information about you at jaygarman.net And I can't wait to hear more about the recent sci-fi conventions that you've gone to and the upcoming ones that I'm sure you'll be able to convince your wonderful, beautiful wife to let you go to again. I'm not sure how she does it, but anything I can do to help that continue, I'm more than happy to support. She's a wonderful woman who's doing a good thing by you and by the Tech Talk Show.
Well, you are right at more levels than you understand, but I expect to hear from you about Chi-Con 7, which is in your neck of the woods.
I know. So. I know. I'm starting to lay the groundwork. I know my wife doesn't listen to the show, so I can say this. I'm laying the groundwork. I'm starting to pick up a few more chores around the house, and I'm going to have her buttered up here, and I got to wait for just the right moment, and then I'll drop that. I'll drop that in there that this is something I want to happen.
Well, and it's something you could take your older kids to because it's educational. They're going to be real astronauts there. There's a whole true science section of it. It's not just science fiction.
Ooh, hey, I got to look up. That's a good hook. That's a good hook. Actually, in fact, that is something that is one of those things. And you, I know, understand this as a parent that you love is the ability to get your kids just as messed up about stuff as you are and indoctrinate them into that kind of thing is that's beautiful. So that actually is a good hook. I may have to do that.
Right. Well, you have a good weekend, buddy, and good luck on your diplomacy.
Yeah, thank you very much. You too. Thanks a lot, Jay. Have a great Saturday.
Yep. All right, bye, buddy.
Bye. Good friend of the show, Jay Geek Trivia Garman, jaygarman.net. You want to go check that out. Lots of Jay Lots of good stuff. You can't go wrong with that. Always good stuff to listen to and hear. And again, it was Customer Jones came through with the correct answers on that, as pretty much as always. I'm going to do just as I promised. We've got some spots. We've got some promos. We've got some great stuff for you. I do want to mention to you, I do want to mention that WRLR, if you didn't realize it, is an all-volunteer station. It is a community radio station. It is supported by the community, and that means you. That means if you're listening right now, whether it be via the terrestrial airways or whether it's through the podcast, you're getting the benefit of a lot of people's time and a lot of people's effort, and you can pay some of that back with hard currency just by going to WRLR.fm. Do a little hunt around. You'll find a button that will allow you to donate. We do appreciate it. That's about it. That's all I'm going to push for you on it. And we're going to come back in just a couple minutes. When I do come back, we've got Cool Sights of the Week and a podcast only song of the week too. So stay tuned. You're listening to Tech Talk on WRLR.
WRLR 98.3 FM.
In Washington today, the president's popularity continued its pace. The most recent poll taken by Blah Blah Magazine and Blah BC News shows Blah 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 Blah.
Looking for local news you can use?
With more on that, here's Blah Blah Blah.
Blah 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 Blah.
The Lake County Journal hits newsstands each Thursday, and it's filled with features, sports, news stories that cover your community. Daily updates can also be found at lakecountyjournal.com, where readers can view photo galleries, post comments, and read blogs. The Lake County Journal, your life connected. Ultra Printing in Grays Lake, Illinois is a proud sponsor of WRLR. Ultra Printing has been family owned and operated since 1985 and was founded by the late Edward Mahoney. Ultra Printing can help you with all your color printing needs, including company and wedding announcements, business cards, envelopes, business stationery, and brochures. Ultra Printing at 155 South Wick Street, Grays Lake. Open Monday through Friday to serve you. Ultra Printing General Manager Dominic Mahoney can be reached at 847-680-8880. Remember, when you need printing, you need Ultra Printing.
Hi, I'm Uncle Bill. Come join me for Uncle Bill's Country Hour on Wednesday mornings from 9 a.m. till 10 right here on WRLR 98.3 FM. We'll play some good old country music, some cowboy tunes, and maybe a little country trivia. Don't forget 9 a.m. on Wednesday morning.
Wow, that came in a little hot. We are back. We are back. This is Tech Talk on WRLR. And wow, what did I promise was going to happen? I can barely remember. Oh, that's right. Some cool sights of the week. And as always, every time we do cool sites, I got a bunch of really good ones. You people out on the interwebs, I love you. Keep it up. Keep up the good work. Thumbs up for interwebs and the people working hard at them, because they're doing some good stuff. Now, we were talking about reading here recently, and reading on Kindles, reading on tablets, reading on your computer. This is such a cool site. I love this site. If you get into individuals who have written things, such as David Sedaris is a top one that a guy I like. It may be even business or science. Robert Krulwich, Andrew Breitbart, of course, he passed away of politics. Amy Tan, Byliner.com. Go check it out. What Byliner.com does is it actually links you by author and by artist to various short works that they have produced that are available for you on the web. Tom Wolfe, another great guy, author of The Right Stuff, Bonfire of the Vanities. If you've got a couple that you really like I mentioned Amy Tan, maybe you're like, gosh, you know what? I'd like to read more stuff like what she writes, you can click through and it'll link you to other individuals that write similar stuff. David Sedaris. I love David Sedaris. I could read him for hours and hours. A lot of his short stuff is put in the New Yorker. And it'll link you right to it. You can go right through and link right to it. Try to say that four times fast. Margaret Atwood. The list of names goes on. Jeffrey Zaslav. I can't even stop. Every time I look at Byliner, I'm looking at it right now, and I just get excited. I want to go and dive into The Atlantic, and I want to dive into GQ and Newsweek, and that's where they're linking you to read all this stuff. Really good stuff if you're into that. Byliner.com. Take a look at that. Now, again, speaking of reading, what about writing? What about writing, too? You can go to sourcefabric.org. If you have got the idea for a book, if your thought is, I want to write a book, you can download from that website Booktype. Booktype is a free open source platform, and it allows you to create on your own beautiful looking books that are formatted for print. They can be formatted for Amazon, like Kindle stuff, Mobi files, iBooks, and almost any single e-reader out there. You create your books on your own. You can use a web interface if you want to, and then you just knock it out. I haven't used it myself, but I've looked. It is just really, really cool stuff. Wikimedia is into it and fully supporting it. And it's just a neat idea. It's a neat idea. Now, we've looked and talked about some other ones out there. Now, we had on Simon Haynes, who's an author from Australia. And he talked about his applications and programs and so on. Those are also available, too, for writing. This one here is specific. Source Fabric, book type. It's specific for being able to produce your books into the new generation of reading devices. It also has the print availability export, but it's specifically designed for making that e-reader stuff cool. So take a look at that. That is just neat stuff. I love that. And then I am going to leave you with one last one, I think. Now this is neat. This is on a whole different topic level. Now I'm gonna warn you. Some of the images that you're gonna find here can be a little bit NSFW, not suitable for work, both in language and image. So you have to be careful if you're going to use this. But if you're like me and you love great wallpaper backgrounds for your desktop, you'll want to go and check out thepaperwall.com. I honestly, there's only been a few websites that I've found that have good wallpapers that have just I gotta find some more, and I lose an hour looking through images. And honestly, some of the images here that you can find may be useful for things other than just wallpapers, but they're all specifically designed size and shape. You can sort them, you can search them, you can find them by tag, by screen size, whatever you want. It's a cool site to go through. The paper wall. Wall.com. Lots of just absolutely fabulous images for anything that you could want to do. And like I said, you got to be a little careful when and how you're looking at it. There are some images that are not completely, I would say, suitable for work, and also to some of the language in some of those is not suitable for work, but definitely go and check it out. And that is going to be our cool sites of the week. I'm going to leave it at that for you. And what I'm going to do now is the podcast only song of the week. Gosh, what am I going to leave us with here? I can't recall. Call if I've if we've played this one before, but I want to play it again because I like it. This is Laurie Anderson. It's off of her album Homeland, and the track is great. It's just a good one for us. It's called Only an Expert. Thank you again for listening. Thanks to Jay Garman for joining us today. Take care, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope that you will stick with us and listen to us next week. If you don't and you can't get to it, don't forget, go to facebook.com/TechTalkWRLR, like us, find us, listen to us, send me an email to techtalk@wrlr.fm, and we love hearing from you, and give a listen to this and come back next week. Thanks.
Now, only an expert can deal with the problem. Because half the problem is seeing the problem. And only an expert can deal with the problem. Only an expert can deal with the problem. So if there's no expert dealing with the problem, it's really actually twice the problem. Because only an expert can deal with the problem. Only an expert can deal with the problem. We like solutions. We like solutions to problems. And there's so many companies that offer solutions. Companies with names like the pet solution, the hair solution, the debt solution, the world solution, the sushi solution. Companies with experts ready to solve these problems. Because only an expert can see there's a problem. And only an expert can deal with the problem. Only an expert can deal with the problem. Invited to be on Oprah, and you don't have a problem, but you want to go on the show, and so you need a problem, and so you invent a problem. But if you're not an expert in problems, you're probably not going to make up a very plausible problem, and so you're probably going to get nailed, you're going to get exposed, and you're going to have to bow down and apologize and beg for the public's forgiveness. Because only an expert can deal with the problem. The shows that try to solve your problems. The big question is always, how can I get control? How can I take control? But don't forget, this is a question for the regular viewer. The person who's barely getting by. The person who's watching shows about people with problems. The person who's one of the 60% of the U.S. population. 1.3 weeks away. 1.3 paychecks away from a shelter. In other words, a person with problems. So when experts say, let's get to the root of the problem, let's take control of the problem, because if you take control of the problem, you can solve the problem. Often this doesn't work at all because the situation is completely out of control.
Because only an expert can deal with the problem, and only an expert can deal with the problem.
Sometimes experts lend you money, and sometimes they lend you lots of money, and sometimes when the subprime mortgages collapse, and banks close and businesses fail, and the crisis spreads around the world, sometimes other experts say, just because all the markets crashed, doesn't mean it's necessarily a bad thing. And other experts say, just because all your friends were fired and your family's broke and we didn't see it coming doesn't mean that we were wrong. And just because you lost your job and your house and all your savings doesn't mean that you don't have to pay for the bailouts, for the traders and bankers and the speculators. Because only an expert can design a bailout, and only an expert can expect a bailout.
Because only an expert can deal with the problem, and only an expert can deal with the problem, and only an expert can deal with the problem. I'm
snow, and huge waves are wiping out cities, and hurricanes are everywhere, and everyone knows it's a problem. But if some of the experts say it's no problem, and if other experts claim it's no problem, or explain why it's no problem, then it's simply not a problem. But when an expert says it's a problem, and makes a movie about the problem, and wins an Oscar about the problem, and gets the Nobel Prize about the problem, then all the other experts have to agree. It is most likely a problem. 'Cause only an expert can deal with the problem. And invade another country, and frighten it, and ruin it, and create havoc and civil war in that other country. If the experts say it's not a problem, and everyone agrees they're experts and good at seeing problems, then invading those countries is simply not a problem. And if a country tortures people, and holds citizens without cause or trial, and sets up military tribunals, this is also not a problem. Unless there's an expert who says this is the beginning of a problem.
There's only an expert can deal with the problem. And only an expert can deal with the problem. And only an expert can deal with the problem. There's only an expert can deal with the problem. And only an expert can deal with the problem.
There's a problem. And seeing the problem is half the problem. Because only an expert can deal with the problem. Only an expert can deal with the problem.